RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So back on the 12th of August, the Minister for Auckland and for Transport, Simeon Brown, put out this press release. The government will introduce legislation this year to enable time-of-use schemes to be developed to reduce travel times on our busiest roads and boost economic growth. He said, congestion is a tax on time and productivity. It means that we are away from home for longer, sitting in gridlock. It results in fewer jobs being done, fewer goods being moved, and delays to services across the city. And Infrastructure New Zealand is welcoming the announcement that it will introduce, the government, that is, its announcement that it will introduce legislation to progress congestion charging schemes for our major cities. Infrastructure New Zealand Chief Executive Nick Leggett said, the current state of our land transport network, which is slowing everyone down, is a drag on our economic productivity and contributes to the dislocation of communities. To talk about congestion charging, we've invited Scott Wilson, who is a congestion charging expert, onto RCR. Scott is the client service lead for road user charging for Australia and New Zealand at CDM Smith Milestone Solutions NZ Limited. He's based in Wellington. He's a senior government policy advisor in road and rail transport sectors on governance, funding, financing, pricing, commercialization, ownership, restructuring, and competition issues. And he writes a blog for Milestone called Road Pricing, which looks at news and commentary about road pricing across the globe, including congestion charging. Bit of a long intro, but we had to set the table, as it were. Scott, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Okay, congestion charging. How long of a history has there been of charging for congestion? Not obviously here, but I guess in the bigger cities, the more populated areas of the world.
Sure. Well, the first city to ever have introduced it was Singapore in 1975. And Singapore introduced, I say, a very basic scheme in the city centre where they required you, if you wanted to drive in the morning peak, to have a sticker. You basically bought a license to drive in the AM peak for a couple of hours. I can't recall how much it was at the time. It was quite successful. It saw a massive reduction in congestion at that time. People chose to get the bus or go at other times. And since then, Singapore has evolved its scheme over many years and now has what I think is the most sophisticated scheme of its type in the world. I think the notable thing about Singapore is they apply it to corridors as well as the city centre. And the price varies by different times and different locations, and they increase or reduce the rates according to the performance of the network. So if speeds on the road are too slow, they'll put the prices up at three monthly intervals. If they get too fast, they put the prices down because they say, well, we haven't got congestion, we don't need to price it anymore. So Singapore was the first. Others that are notable, London introduced a blunter scheme in 2003, Stockholm in 2006, and there's been a few other cities since then.
And do they work?
By and large, they do. I think Singapore is a great example because it maintains flows on the flow of speed on the network. So they have a target on their motorways to keep speeds running at around sort of 60 or 70 kilometres an hour, not the full speed limit. And that means the traffic flows well. It means that they have less congestion. It means both cars and trucks and buses can flow effectively. And it doesn't seem to cause problems elsewhere in the network. But they've designed it as a very highly targeted scheme for congestion. London worked initially. It's a bit blunt. It doesn't really work now. And the London Assembly did say around 8 years ago that it's no longer fit for purpose. So you can design them to work or you can design them to not work. You just have to make them very tailored for your own conditions and also keep on top of the changes in those conditions and really focus on where and when congestion is.
What do you think the aim will be to operate that here? Like the Singaporean model? Because the way you talked about the blunt London model, it sounds like you weren't too enthusiastic about that.
No, the press release that came out from the Beehive when this was announced, like you said, actually cited the Singapore model. And yeah, Singapore's different from Auckland in many ways. But in terms of the policy itself, I think it would be more along that sort of model And certainly the report that was completed in 2020 under the last government, but was started again under the previous government, sort of recommended a model that was a bit like Singapore. So there would be a downtown cordon in Auckland and maybe some corridor charging. It was all very general, and there's obviously more work has to be done on it, but it looks like it would be more focused upon the times when congestion is at its worst, so it wouldn't operate necessarily all day long, and the prices would be adjusted from time to time to make sure that it was actually working and it wasn't just a way of raising a lot of money.
Going to get to the mechanical part of how it all works and how people are charged before we're done, but it seems to me an obvious question would be, I mean, people need to move into areas that are congested. I was in Auckland for 5 years, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And I guess there's some behavioural change that can be generated from a scheme like this. But in the end, people still need to get to where they need to go. And I guess going into the city during work days, that's mainly work or commerce related. So that's a bit of a psychological barrier that people have to move through to accept the concept in the first place, especially if it's not very familiar here. So what would you have to say about that?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that whatever scheme is first introduced has to be on a fairly small scale. It has to show people that it's not going to be frightening, it's not going to be blunt, and it can work. Now, you can make a big difference to congestion by seeing quite a small percentage of traffic move. So if you think about school holiday times versus non-school holiday times, you get around 5 or 8% fewer trips at peak times during school holidays. That's enough to make the roads flow a lot better. Now, it's not perfect. It's not like 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, but it means people get to where they want to go more reliably. And I think part of the idea is that if most people are paying and getting, you know, more time to themselves and they can, you know, use their time more efficiently, waste less petrol, the buses can also flow more efficiently for those that want alternatives. And then people who may think, well, maybe instead of going at 8:30, I go in at 9:30, then they're making a slightly different choice, but it's making it easier for everybody else. And they're not paying. So if you're going during the middle of the day, you're not paying, but the roads are flowing much better then. So I think it has to start on a small scale. Show people that it works on a small scale and then gradually scale it up. That's the trick, and that's where the future work has to be.
What about pricing? That has to be acceptable as well, doesn't it? Because the last thing you want, or anyone wants, is people feeling like they're being fleeced again.
Absolutely. It should only really be enough to enable the roads to flow more efficiently. It shouldn't just be a big charge. I mean, London, we're up to £12 or £15 a day. That you don't need to do anything like that to make the sort of change that you need. It's probably in the realm of, you know, $3 to $5 may well be all you need to do. But the work has to be done on that. Some people have to go and do some modelling to see what that is. And it shouldn't be a single price. So it might be at the busiest period, let's say 7:30 till 8:30. It's one price, but it's a bit cheaper at 7 to 7:30 or cheaper below that. And then below a certain point, it's free. So that people know that it really is these small increments of price. A little bit like, I mean, airfares vary by what time of day you want to fly, hotels, busy periods. So people can see, look, if I really need to go at this time, I'll pay more. But if I can move my time an hour or two, then I can save money. But if the roads are flowing and we get more movement, it's better for freight, it's better for tradies doing more jobs. It'll just allow the city to work more efficiently.
Where should congestion charging be implemented? I mean, there are places in New Zealand that are less congested than others, you know, provincial cities I'm thinking about. Would we have to draw a line somewhere? I mean, what is the equation that kicks in that determines this regime should be installed in a particular place?
Yeah, I think if you look at our cities and by international standards, Auckland is clearly by far the most congested city. And there has been a lot of work done to date on that. There's more that needs to be done. But I think if you compare Auckland to cities of similar population overseas, like, say, Brisbane, it is worse congested than a city like Brisbane. So if you want Auckland to be internationally competitive and for people to be able to access the opportunities of the city without being constrained by time, which is what congestion does, Auckland's obvious. Wellington's probably a second one that seems obvious. I mean, Wellington has far fewer problems, but you know, in the morning it can be quite slow to get from the airport into the city. There are other parts of the network. Look, Tarong has been floated. I know they raised that and it got voted down by the council, and that's yep. fair enough. I think they probably advanced a far too ambitious proposal. Beyond that, I think it's going to be much more isolated. Look, there might be one or two roads in Christchurch, but I think it's going to be up to the local authorities themselves and obviously working with the government as to where they think it's worthwhile. But I think just having one in Auckland would be a start. I mean, I think you've got to show that there and it's bedded down and working before you really get too ambitious.
I've just moved from Wellington. I knew the back way to the airport, never had a problem. Bit of local knowledge helped there, around the hills and a few back streets, and I was there. No, I get what you're saying, though. What about CBD retailers and businesses that rely on a quantum of traffic
sure.
coming into the area? They could be feeling insecure about this kind of idea, and given that there has been a slump for many CBD retailers and businesses, is there evidence that that they could take a hit here based on other experiences in other parts of the world?
I think there's two key points here. I would say that any downtown scheme for either Auckland or Wellington should only be operating in the morning peak and perhaps the evening peak.
Okay.
So after 9:30 in the morning, there should be no charge. And retailers, most of retailers' businesses during the day and in the weekend, likewise, you wouldn't look to having a charge then, because that's a time where people choose to travel with their families, and it's most places don't apply it in the weekend. So I think if you just focus it on those busiest periods, you can actually ensure that they're protected from that. And I think those concerns are valid. And in some cities in Norway which have got this, they have found that if they have operating in the afternoon, people might stay in the city longer after work and may shop, may go out for a meal, and they'll wait till at 6:30 if the charge drops off, then they'll drive home. So it might actually have a positive element there too. So, but there are ones, I mean, Gothenburg's an example where it runs all day, and I think it has had a bit of a negative impact, but they've set it up to make money. There was a little bit of congestion at a certain junction at peak times, and the scheme they implemented was much bigger in scale. So I'd be surprised if we did anything like that in New Zealand.
Is there any argument for giving lower income folk who still have to travel and maybe into the city don't have much choice some kind of break on, well, at least the charging, even if charging was to remain? Is there any case for that?
I think that it will depend on the scheme design. I think if you look at Wellington and Auckland downtown, look, parking prices in these are so high anyway. I think most people on low incomes at the peak times are already getting the bus or getting the train.
Right.
And those options are there. So I think for the downtown ones, that's not the case. The jobs downtown tend to be higher income anyway. For other parts of the network, there might be a case. I know when Wayne Brown last year floated, I think on the Northwestern and the Southern Motorway, it struck me that there were probably people in the category you are talking about. And for a transitional measure, at least, there might be some merit in having some sort of discount that applies to people. You've got to be careful, though. You can put these sort of discounts and exemptions, and it's very, very easy to have others say, oh, I want one as well, and then there's no point doing it because you've weakened it. But I think as a transitional measure, there is some merit in giving people who are struggling, who don't have adequate alternatives, some leeway.
Yeah, you could give them a break on public transport would be another
thing that you could do.
Have we seen in other parts of the world a move to using public transport? Because some people are resistant to that. I really don't know why, but they can be. Is this something that will get people into public transport if the transport's good, timely, reliable and, of course, cost-effective.
Yes, it does do that. The evidence for Stockholm was that when they introduced its scheme, around half the people, just under half the people who, they surveyed the people who changed behaviour, and half of the people went on to buses or trains.
Okay.
The rest of them changed the time of travel, or they travelled less frequently. So it does have a big impact. And I think the biggest benefit on public transport that's often ignored is if you make the roads flow better, the buses flow more reliably, and you can run more bus services for the same number of buses, because they're not, you don't have to have them bunched up in traffic. So you can move more people. And that means that it's sort of a win-win all round.
In terms of the technology that would lie behind this, there'll be people thinking of privacy issues being tracked and their movements known. How is this usually done technologically? Is it number plate recognition? I mean, what is the system? What is the system used for tracking and billing all this?
Pretty much all systems in the world today use number plate recognition cameras, which are exactly the same as the ones that we've got on the toll roads at the Northern Gateway that bypasses Orewa and the two in Tauranga. So, I mean, obviously the details of how exactly it would work have not been determined, but typically I would say that people could set up an account with your number plate, with your credit card or bank details, and every time you pass one of these points, or there might be a cap, it might just be one a day, you'll get the amount deducted from your account. And as long as the money is collected, they don't really need to care about the fact that the number plate image is there. There's no need to keep a big database of those. And it's really, if it's just one or two points, you're passing those points now. It shouldn't be a big deal for privacy. But the privacy laws are quite good on this. I know it's slightly different, but we have, for road user charges for trucks, a lot of them have electronic systems on board that measure the distance and the location with GPS. And the law states that all the data collected for doing that by the companies that do this, like EROAD, is only allowed to be used to collect the money. They're not allowed to pass that on for anything else. So it's not provided for marketing or for police surveillance or anything of the sort. So I'd expect that the law would provide privacy protection to a similar standard across the board. Of course, the legislation hasn't been drafted yet or put forward, but these are the sorts of things that will be worth discussing at that point.
I noticed that you responded to what Simon Wilson said in the New Zealand Herald about congestion pricing, and I read some of that, and I got the feeling you might have been a little triggered at and reading that, because you said you didn't usually respond to things like this. So why did you, just curious, why did you think that you had to come in and well, I mean, it's not that you went hard, but you made yourself pretty clear there.
Well, I think there were a couple of things. I mean, there were a couple of mistakes that he made in terms of congestion pricing elsewhere that I thought needed to be pulled up on. But I thought it was very, very odd for someone who is a columnist who's well known to be very much in favour of there being more public transport and more cycling. He's quite keen on action on climate change. He was quite supportive of the last government, I think it'd be fair to say.
Yep.
And then for a policy that actually can achieve a lot of the things that he wants, even if it's not being implemented by the government he supports, this can help reduce emissions, because you've got less congestion, the traffic flow is better. More people using public transport, maybe more people will cycle. It ought to make the city more like what he wants. But then he says, it doesn't work. Then he says, it might work. It was a very incoherent article. And I just thought, I didn't know whether he was just trying to make this a bit of a hit against the government that he obviously doesn't like for a policy that, I mean, honestly, this is a policy that the last government were sort of advancing itself with their own objectives around it. I think the concept in itself should just be judged on its merits. If he wants the government to do it differently, then that's fine. He can make that argument. He can make the argument about where the money should be spent and how it's designed. But to say that, it doesn't work, but the government needs to do all these other things, which it just didn't hang well for me. I just thought it was well written.
And you can't really widen the roads to any level anymore. That's all pretty well set down forever, isn't it? Unless you completely sort of bulldoze another street width on each side of every road, it's just not going to happen, is it?
No, I mean, the cost of houses is so much, we're not going to get that. Auckland's motorway network is mostly built. Look, there might be a few other bits built, like the East-West Link and Mill Road. But by and large, if Auckland's going to grow, you're going to have to spread demand and people are going to have to travel different ways. You just need a range of innovations and more traffic and better traffic management to do that. It's not going to be a very simplistic one-size-fits-all solution for everything.
And do you have any idea, just to wind up, how long could take before, let's say, Auckland is starting to implement that? They've got to put in the infrastructure to do it, I guess. That takes a bit of time. But in your sort of future view, how long do you think this will be before it can be in place anyway? Obviously, the government has to go through its motions and legislation, et cetera, but after that?
Yeah, I mean, I think once, if we make some assumption that legislation is passed sometime next year, Auckland, I think, has to work with NZTA together to develop a finalised scheme. That's probably a 6 to 12 month period after that. And then if you then procure and implement it, it's at least 18 months. So I think we're talking maybe 2.5 to 3 years after legislation is passed. It'll depend how complex the scheme is. If they just want to do it on one motorway as a trial, it'll be a lot quicker. If they want to do a much bigger scheme, it'll take a lot longer.
Fascinating. Scott, thanks for coming on RCR and telling us about congestion charging. It's the first time we've had to get our head around it at this level, and we appreciate your expertise coming on this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.